Hello, this is Satyan Raja, and you're listening to News for the Soul. Be open in your mind, your body, your being. Allow yourself to drench in this awesome information to evolve you to your next place.
Did you know that News for the Soul is home to the largest totally free life-changing audio resource on the World Wide Web? And did you know that journalist and single mom Nicole Whitney is single-handedly making this freely available for you to hear? That's why your support is critical to help keep News for the Soul totally free. You can help in several ways. Firstly, you can tell everyone you know about News for the Soul. So many people out there still do not know about this totally free life-changing resource. So do us, yourself, and your friends a favor and pass it on today. Secondly, financial support for News for the Soul helps keep the show going. Whether it's through advertising, donations, or purchases of our exclusive audio and video packages, like the one and only Spoon Bending Kit, which will teach you how to bend metal with your mind for real. This support helps keep us on the air. Go to newsforthesoul.com now to find out more. We invite you to help us help the world, and thanks for tuning in. It's listeners like you who have made News for the Soul the number one life-changing talk radio show in the world, according to Google and AOL. Together, we are already making a difference in our world. So thank you for listening, and thanks in advance for your support. Now, let's get back to the show.
Good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. Got that all covered again. Dipha LaBelle, she's the author of The Magic Doorway into the Divine. 25 years ago, she says she had a life-altering mystical experience and healing experience that led her on a new journey that culminated into her current life path, her work, and this book. The Magic Doorway into the Divine is the book, and the Magic Doorway .com is the website. That's where you go, Dipha LaBelle. So let's bring her on and start the fun. So welcome back to the show, Dipha LaBelle.
Great to be back, Nicole.
The Magic Doorway continues as we sneak through the original portal. We've now received questions. Last time you and I talked, we were delving into this oneness thing and trying to go, you know, deeper into that subject and really kind of get it. And at the end of the show, I invited questions from the audience. They have responded. We are ready with questions. So, trying to understand this, I guess the whole point is really trying to understand the oneness thing in real world terms and being able to make this, you know, bring that into real world stuff, because we still kind of separate from, in theory, the spiritual theory, and then, you know, then this life happens. And let's begin. Tracy B. from Vancouver. I still don't understand what oneness really means. Well, that's a good place to start, isn't it?
I think so.
Can you elaborate? Okay, well, let's start there.
Okay, well, I'm going to start with the spiritual thing, because that's where it started in the first place.
Okay.
Well, all the scriptures, you know, in describing creation, you know, have said that in the beginning, God was alone in a state of eternal bliss, you know, ecstasy, peace, and all of the good things. And all of the souls were united with him in a latent form and deeply submerged. So what separated us from this oneness? The great poet Saint Rumi has said that God made man to play the game of love with himself. So separation began so that an intensity of longing could be created. And when the souls returned back to God, they would be even more ecstatic to be home. So this is one perspective on oneness by Rumi. But regardless of what happened, I mean, I'm sure a lot happened at the beginning of creation, but regardless of what happened that caused this separation, we're all longing to return home to our oneness. And it takes many shapes and forms. So oneness, like every other concept, can be interpreted in as many different ways as there are individuals. So I looked on the Wikipedia website, and there it outlined how oneness can be described in various ways. And here are a couple of ways that the website described it. It can be seen as referring to the experience of the absence of egoic identity boundaries. And according to some traditions, it is the perception of an absolute identity with God, or I am that. Some maintain that oneness transcends consciousness, and others feel that the human experiencing of oneness expresses itself in the unity of thought and reality. So we see that oneness is really just a concept. But to sum it up, oneness is the result of taking a limited, contracted, egoic self to an expansive, enlightened self. Oneness, then, is wherever we are one with our environment, with God, with others, and with consciousness. I was flipping through the June issue of Discover magazine, and there's an interesting article entitled Soul Search. The author made a very interesting revelation. It had to do with those individuals who have had near-death experiences. And according to Dr. Grayson, who was in the article, who is a psychiatrist, what was most impressive to him was how these individuals had so profoundly changed as a result of experiencing oneness. And I quote, "It's just one experience that takes place in maybe a fraction of a second, and it changes their lives. Psychiatrists spend years trying to help people make fairly small changes in their lives, and here comes this experience, which in a blink of an eye totally transforms reality." Then he goes on to say, "They come back believing that the golden rule is the way that the universe works. What you do to other people gets done to you." He further says that not only do their lives change dramatically, they might change jobs, relationships, become more spiritual or altruistic, but also these changes have lasted for decades afterward. So we see that oneness can only be experienced when the mind stops, like a near-death experience, or an enlightenment experience, or even in meditation. Now, another angle on oneness is something I read, and I couldn't remember the name of the magazine, but it's a scientific one anyway. Now, science says that humans share 99.95% of the same genes or DNA. Therefore, less than 0.1% is responsible for all of the differences that you see in the world around you, such as height, skin color, hair, eyes, and so on. Essentially, we are all one and made of the same substance. So whether we want to accept it or not, we are all brothers and sisters on this planet. We are all one, even scientifically, whether we hate each other or love one another. And for centuries, the true religious leaders have spoken about our oneness with each other and God. Our problem, though, is that when we focus on the 0.1%, and that's what we seem to do in our world, the differences, and because of what we see is different, we judge, compare, compete, and eventually go to war in some form, whether that be in the form of an argument with a friend or an all-out war with another country. So our true nature must be experienced and can only be referred to as light and love by the mystics, by the near-deathers, you know, anyone that's touched that. And this is where we recognize our oneness with each other. This oneness can only be achieved by stepping out of our living in the 0.1% or differences and becoming established in our true nature. Presently, we're self-absorbed and focused on our own little world and family and forget that the starving babies and people in war-torn countries are really as much a part of us as our own families. It's almost like, well, they're over there and I'm over here, so, you know, they're something different than me. They're not me, but they are. So in my book, The Magic Doorway into the Divine, I have a chapter that I've entitled From Duality to Divinity. In this I relate the story that I experienced of going from body consciousness to cosmic consciousness, where I experienced for myself what oneness really means. And I'm just going to relate this story to you. It's a bit of a shortened story, but it was when I was living at an ashram, and it had these buses that would take you from one building to the other. An ashram is like a monastery, it's quite a austere kind of environment and focused on meditation. So these buses would take us back and forth from one building to the next, and they would play this mantra that would go on and on and on, and the buses would be packed. We'd be packed in like sardines. And I was having a particularly difficult day where these people in the bus were swaying from side to side and banging into each other and laughing. They were having a good time, but I wasn't. I was not happy being touched and pushed and squished, and it was 90 degrees. It was, you know, one of those kinds of PMS kind of days. And so I had reached an incredible crescendo at one point where I thought, I can't bear this. This is unbelievable. I can't bear these people, and I'm going to go up and I'm going to rip that mantra right out of the bus. It's like every form of separation became apparent for me in that moment. So I just, with all my heart, I said, okay, I'm not in this ashram to kill people. So I said, please help me with complete intention. Please help me get through this separation so I can return back to at least normal, if not one. And within moments, all of a sudden, everyone started undulating from side to side, and the people became a wave. They were no longer people. It was like this blissful, delicious wave going from side to side in the bus. And I was really enjoying it. I was floating around from side to side, and the mantra just sounded like the most amazing thing I'd ever heard in my whole life. And it was phenomenal. And it was just a split second of going from separation to oneness.
Mm. That's amazing. And it wasn't the heat.
And it wasn't the heat. So having a really strong intention to know the truth and to awaken to a higher frequency can literally pop us out of a contracted reality and open us to a world of love. And if we so choose, we can expand from looking at the world from our individual self to looking at the world from our universal self, and from body consciousness to cosmic consciousness. So that's what happened. It was a simple thing, but it was a big thing. And how do we do it? Well, sitting silently in meditation, deep prayer. We'll in time see that even the humblest human being is of the same essence as the greatest genius. We really are all one. We really are the same. And in this way, we'll stop injuring others, as we'll begin to see everyone as the one.
You know, I think it's really valuable, the example you gave, and also the scientific aspect of, you know, that it's only the 0.1% of us that represents the actual separation. Like, I can get my brain around that, you know,
mm-hmm.
and get in there, but they're all sort of floating around in bliss in outer space.
I know.
Spiritual beginnings. That's where everyone gets lost, because I'm thinking, my mind's going, well, hell, that sounds boring.
Yeah, exactly.
Nothing to do except float around being bliss.
You almost become angry at it.
I know.
After a while. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of scientific examples here that I came across in this project. So.
Well, that's very helpful, because it really brings it down to real world stuff. That's where we want it. So
yeah.
Hopefully, Tracy B, that helps you out, answers that question. And let's move on to the next. We've got Ronald K from Vermont. He is asking, how do I experience oneness when I don't get along with people at work?
Well, this is a really classic question. a lot of people have trouble with people at work. But oneness goes beyond personality and differences. I came across something on a calendar by Rumi, the great Sufi poet saint, and he once said, "Wherever you stand, be the soul of that place." And so we kind of have to look at what are we putting our focus on when we do find ourselves at war with people in our life. And again, back to the 0.1%, we are focusing on the 0.1% differences or the separation from each other. So really, oneness begins with us. Just like Rumi says, someone needs to stand up and be the soul of that place to make that change. But in order to do that, we have to do some serious soul searching. So let's look at a couple of things. There are no accidents when we find ourselves in certain environments with people that we don't like. The best thing to ask ourselves is, what am I here to learn from this? And while we're asking ourselves this question, also have the intention to know the truth and to transcend separation, like I did on the bus when I wanted to kill everybody. So what am I here to learn from this? And why we have the intention to know the truth, and why I keep bringing that up, is they say that when God, or when you take one step towards God, God takes 1,000 steps towards you. So that can help us make a shift. So start by being honest with yourself. We can only do this when we have a sincere longing to know oneness. If we really don't care one way or the other, and we'd rather stay in our separation, then it's not going to work. But if you really, really have a longing to know this oneness, it will work. We may discover that we're here to learn humility or to accept the differences, to rise above pettiness, or maybe we're here to bring others together somehow. See, every situation is another doorway to our divinity and oneness. And what we can do is embrace these people as the gifts that they are. Because there is only one goal, to see everything from the eyes of our God self. Just as the people that have had near-death experiences, when they return, what do they say? Just as Jesus said, "Do unto others as you would have them do unto you." So it's a good time to start practicing, since one day I guess we have to take a look at what we did to others. So how would you like to be treated, and are you treating these others respectfully as the mystery that they are? So we're all caught up in the belief that we're separate entities, and for this reason we are suffering terribly. And no soul wants to forget its oneness with God. But many of us do, and as a result we live secret lives filled with misery and suffering, which leads to intense feelings of resentment, anger, fear, judgment, greed, pride. You know, we all know the list. So somebody must step out and be the soul of that workplace by bringing compassion and kindness to others, even if you have to fake it at first. But if we sit quietly every day and pray or meditate with the intention to know love, and to practice bringing this love and compassion to all we meet, we will be doing our part in stopping the war that we see in our world and in ourselves. And only then will our life become a life of peace and oneness.
So it's really taking responsibility of being the one to raise the bar and take it to a higher level.
Yeah.
Rather than getting caught up in it, you know, realizing that we're responsible and accountable for it.
Exactly.
Okay. Alrighty, Ronald K., there you go. Next we go to Debbie in Toronto, Canada. I'm recently divorced with an abusive partner. How do I experience oneness with that?
Oh, this is a really good question. And we're going to take it fairly deep. And I know we all have these times where we just feel this deep pain and we don't really tell many people about it. Sometimes it's in our life it feels like our heart is being shattered. I mean, death in our family, divorce, our loss of identity, our career, all of these things can make us feel as if our whole self is being dissolved into pieces. The guilt, the fear, anger, pain, all of this, it seems insurmountable at times like this. We may feel like we really are in the dark night of our soul. However, we do have a choice, even though it may seem so difficult. As I mentioned in my book, you can use every situation in life as a doorway to experience your own divinity. And here, too, you can see all of this as yet another doorway into your divine self rather than as a life sentence of pain and disappointment. Opportunity knocks on our door sometimes in the form of anguish. This anguish can actually be a gift to take us to the next level of our being. Such deep disappointment makes us search for that which we have lost. And it's not the disappointment of an abusive marriage or the loss of self-esteem that we grieve, but rather it is a separation from our soul. So anguish can be used to reconnect our starving soul back with God's love. And that's the only place in this whole world where there is unconditional, never-ending love. Everything else, as we begin to notice as we get older, is transitory, impermanent. So in some ways, it's only through pain that God can get our attention. Because without it, we might never feel the need to turn to him, her. So one thing that we can do when we're having a lot of suffering this way or separation from someone is we can take all of our pain and offer it to the source as if it's a big bundle. You know how we carry all these little aches and pains within us, all these little sufferings? One thing we can do is just take a few minutes out of our day and just sit and just take all of that. Find out where it's sitting in your body and just take it all and offer it to the source, to God, or whatever word you resonate with. And just free yourself from it. Because we think we have to do everything. We think we have to be the ones to carry it all, but we don't. And that's another place where oneness can come in, where we realize, I can't do it without you. Because we think we can do it, but we really can't. And if we try, it's just strain and more suffering. So it's a way to unburden ourselves. And all of the mystics, both from the East and the West, write extensively about the pain of the soul that they experienced, and that it is only through the merging with God that quenches this thirst and removes this pain. So that little moment that you could take out of your day can actually merge you with God, even if it's 5 minutes. So one of the greatest pains in life also is the separation in our heart from another human being. I know when we're divorced, sometimes we just want to get rid of them and never see them again, but we don't want to hate. We may never live with or befriend an abuser again, but the true healing and forgiveness can only begin once we have nourished our own self and quenched some of our own thirst. And again, finding where that true love, that love that is in, that is permanent, not impermanent, that's where we have to dive. That's where what we have to do in order to quench some of our thirst. And this is where the work on ourselves begins. We can divorce someone, but we can't divorce the lessons that our karma is here to teach us. To forgive another, we must also forgive ourselves for the harm that we may have inflicted onto our own self and others. And when we see that we are all one, and we all live in this disease called separation, we're all in the same boat, then we can have compassion on our enemies and see that we've all come from the same place and we all have to work through our difficult situations. So to know oneness, we must go beyond our mind that judges everything. It's better to ask the question, what part of me needs healing than I need to have this person as a reflection of that, rather than to judge them and separate from them in your heart, because only we suffer when we do this. When we cut even one person out of our heart, we will not be able to feel oneness with anything at all in our life. So it's really about forgiveness. Only after you've quenched some of your own thirst. So start with taking the labels off of people and situations, and be with the energy that lives in oneness when the mind stops. So when we touch that energy, we're open, loving, forgiving, and compassionate. Kripal Singh, a great saint, once said, God plus mind equal man. Man minus mind equal God. So if this is a nice little formula to remind yourself where you are. So thank you.
What about, is the one ingredient that's necessary for all of that to come together for them is having that basic foundation and trust in a God? What about those that are so in the dark night of their soul that they don't have that connection to start with?
Well, all they can do is that. Part of the dark night of the soul is to take us to some kind of connection. So if one is in the dark night of the soul, all they can really do is pray. And it's when you're in your deepest sadness is when you're closest to God. And so at a time like that, prayer. Even if you don't believe there's anything to pray to.
Why is it that it's in the deepest sadness? Because I would have thought it would be like the opposite.
Well, because you're closer. Sometimes when you're so happy about how everything's going in your life and your new this and your new job and whatnot, we're living more on the surface.
Hmm.
And as we go deeper into ourselves, the sadness lets us see the superficiality of the world that we live in. So in a way, I know we were not supposed to be depressed, we're not supposed to be sad, and I agree, we have to keep our state up and all of that. But if we find ourselves being pulled into something like that for some reason, instead of, you know, taking antidepressants and whatever else one does for that, I mean, that's where all addiction comes from. We are sad, we're separate from God, that's the truth. That's where the real sadness is. So you're closer to God in your real sadness because you're closer to the fact that you're separate. You're closer to the fact that you don't like that you're separate.
Okay. Well, I hope that helps, Debbie. We have to go to the next question here. Oh, this is coming from Cheryl in Colorado. I have no money. How do I find oneness in that state of lack?
Okay. Money.
You knew that had to come up in the question somewhere.
So escape from this money thing. Okay. Oneness doesn't depend on whether or not we have money. But I know the angst we experience when we don't. You know, and yet the Swamis and the other spiritual aspirants have renounced their money and material wealth in order to not have distractions or attachments. And have, in the process, attained oneness. So the mind creates many anxious and fearful scenarios when we don't have money. But if we have done everything that we can to make money, you know, we've done all the positive things, we've, you know, seen all the people that can help us, put our resumes out, touch about everything you possibly can, and it still seems to be elusive, then we must call in the heavier artillery to achieve this oneness. This no money thing, again, can actually be the doorway to our divinity and not just a problem if we're willing to work with it in this way. We have to get out of the mind before we can do this, though, because, you know, when you have no money, you're so stressed all the time that it's really hard to drop out of it. But you have to let yourself take a minute and go, okay, I'm just going to drop out of this for a minute. It can be an invitation for us to go deeper within ourselves and to surrender to the true wealth, which nobody can take away from us. Money can get tied into self-worth. However, the true worth is permanent. And the true wealth is permanent. So, really, if you've done everything you can and you still have no money, you just have to sit and be with it and go, okay, this may be what I have to go through right now. And also today we hear a lot of talk about money and spirituality being merged together. And that kind of thinking may make you feel that not having money means that you're a failure in your spirituality or not living up to your true potential. As I mentioned a minute ago, we all have our karmas that determine the experiences we need to have in order to learn the life lessons that we're on this planet to learn. And having a house and two cars in the garage isn't necessarily it. I don't think God cares one way or the other what possessions we may or may not have. But rather, in the midst of our poverty or suffering, did we remember where everything comes from? And were we able to show love and compassion to ourselves and others? Were we able to have faith and trust that we're being taken care of in the big picture? It's also about developing our faith and trust in our own knowing, despite what the latest new way of thinking might be. You know, and as we grow and develop spiritually, sometimes these tests are amplified for us so that we can better learn to surrender to the inherent perfection of life as it unfolds, and to our Creator, however that looks. And that we may not get what we want, but we're given what our souls need in order to deepen our reconnection with the Source, or God, or Divinity. So when we trust, have faith in ourselves, in the source of life, we'll begin to experience our oneness, whether we have money or we don't have money. So, I hope that's
okay.
Helpful.
It's always one of the tough ones, bringing that stuff together, spirit and money, and there's so much stuff around that. But
there's a lot of stuff around it.
Yep.
But I think it's a level of understanding.
Here we go to the next one, Trion, or I'm sorry if I'm saying this wrong, Trion or Trion in Denmark. I cannot possibly feel one with George Bush or Hitler, and why should I?
Okay.
Excellent questions.
Excellent questions. Okay. Well, the source of life that created us also created Bush and Hitler.
Man, that 1% or 0.1% is starting to look huge now, too.
It is, isn't it? It really gets played in this realm.
Wow.
This realm is a realm of light and dark, and there's something to learn from everyone and everything. So in order to bring the oneness to the world, we need to learn how to love unconditionally. And again, as Nicole just mentioned, You need to learn to love unconditionally because we are all one. And there's nothing else we can do. So it's not something we do, it's just something that we are. So, not unlike a parent that loves their child no matter what crimes they may have committed. The Dalai Lama asked before Saddam Hussein's execution that his life be spared, since he believes that all souls can transform themselves no matter what crimes were committed. And that was quite a powerful thing, that execution. It brought up a lot of feelings for a lot of people. But this doesn't mean that we allow someone to harm others. But violence begets violence, and war will always be a losing battle because we're fighting ourselves. So the anger or hatred we feel and project towards Bush or Hitler or anyone for that matter is the anger and hatred that we carry inside. And these leaders are the manifestation of the consciousness of the masses. In a sense, they're like puppets acting out the violence and anger that we have disowned within ourselves. We then, in turn, scapegoat them, which keeps the cycle of war and blame alive. Well, we don't have to like them, and we don't have to marry them.
Thank God.
But from the higher perspective, we are Bush, we are Hitler, we're also the Dalai Lama, Buddha, Jesus, or anyone else you can think of. So this is what makes us so all-powerful, one with all power.
I think this is the part we've got to break down for people, because right away people are out there going, yeah, I'm not killing kids. Hello.
Okay.
I'm not blowing up people.
Okay,
in other countries.
This is what I'm going into now.
Okay, good.
Okay, so if anyone's ever spent time with a really spiritually powerful being, you would see them in complete ownership of all these qualities. From what looks like rage and anger to complete holiness. But the difference between them and us is they're not disturbed by any of these states. When they're angry, they wield anger like a sword in order to heal. They have a way of transmuting energy where it's like the anger doesn't get projected, doesn't get thrown onto someone. It's like it's used in a way to heal. It's like you take every last ounce of strength and you put it in the direction of love. That's what they do. Or they'll use their spiritual power or even sexual power to merge with something higher than another person, with the Creator, and to bring love rather than separation. So everything that they experience, they bring it to a higher frequency. They don't stop at the 0.1%. They know that everything that's in that 99.95% is theirs as well. So they just know how to work it. They're masters.
So it's not about getting caught up in what is happening right now, but taking responsibility for the energy to raise the energy?
Yes.
Okay.
It's always that. That's what a true magician is. To be a magician in your life. It's always to be directed to the one for the upliftment and good of humanity. In all situations, all the time. It's not just sort of an interesting new age game that, you know, we want to play because, you know, it's fun, but it's our world and our earth depend upon our shift in consciousness right now. As we look around, all we see is the us and them game, the separation, the 0.1%, and it no longer works. It's what got us into this trouble in the first place. The thinking that got us into this won't get us out of it. So we have to change our thinking. Our mind got us here, and it can also get us out, but only if we were to master it. And as I mentioned before, we master it by raising the vibration. It's just a simple thing. Pray, you know, intention. I'm angry. I want to kill that person. Okay, this anger is an opportunity for me to go to love. And we can all do it. We can actually master it. And forgiveness is the key here. It's the big key to open the door to oneness. Because when we forgive, we free ourselves. Because as I said earlier, when we cut even one person out of our heart, we're cutting everyone out of our heart. Because we're one. Martin Luther King once said, "Our scientific power has outstripped our spiritual power." We have science, but one can only go so far with the mind. And this is where spirit has to take over to save our world. We can go beyond our us and them mentality and expand to include all of them as part of our own self. In this way, we can understand the real power that we carry to create a new world. Because we really do. We have that much power. It's phenomenal how much power we have. It would be a world in which every person on the planet rests in our own heart as family. And together we bring in the harmony of oneness. So that's the goal, forgiveness.
So in saying that then, that would be the same as suggesting that our anger or frustration or focusing on people like George Bush and things going on that we don't like, we're actually perpetuating more things that we don't like.
Absolutely. It's like an ongoing ball that keeps building. More separation, more separation, more separation. Somebody, as Rumi said, has to stop and be the soul of that place and go, wait, no.
And take responsibility.
It's really about taking responsibility.
Oof.
Nobody likes to do it.
No, especially for that.
Well, I mean, after we all saw Al Gore's video, it is a real waker-upper. It's really about taking responsibility. And now we're talking here today about taking responsibility for how we see others. I mean, we need all of it. We need to, you know, do our power thing in the, you know, turning off our radios and this and that, but we need to enhance our power of oneness, because we have such power to bring oneness, and the two work together.
And of course, we don't want to be turning off our radios, just get solar powered radios. Thank you. Okay.
Right,
I think
exactly.
This is very powerful, though. I think this is something we can, you know, we're kind of grasping this. This is powerful stuff. Because
mm-hmm.
these are, you know, we're getting some good questions that are bringing up areas where it's hard to see when you're in it where
yeah.
the oneness is. And we're doing that. So that's really good. We've got to get to the next question here, see how many we can get in, because we're getting close to the top of the hour.
Okay.
Robert S. from Arkansas. I was about to say Arkansas. That would be wrong. Arkansas. Robert asks, "My family is always fighting, and how do I find oneness in the middle of all of that going on?"
I don't mean to be redundant, but every life experience or situation is to evolve our soul. And this is why we're brought together. Our lives and our families, as they are the perfect vehicles to evolve our souls. And nobody, of course, wants to hear that, but they are. I have a friend whose family fought constantly, and she was about to visit them in another city. And before she left, she told me that she was really going to try and change her attitude towards them. And these were the changes she decided to make. She decided not to take her family's criticisms or judgments to heart. And then she decided she was going to start to serve them as a form of selfless service, as if she was in an ashram while she was there. And so what she chose to do to keep herself busy was, you know, whatever chores were needed, you know, getting people tea, grocery shopping, listening to them. She looked at each one of them beyond their personality to their soul. She looked into their eyes and saw the Creator. She didn't just see, oh, this person that she has all these issues with. She saw something beyond that. And she also put her needs and expectations aside and became the listener instead of the self-absorbed talker, which was definitely a push for her. She loved to talk, and she liked everybody to hear it. So when she came back from this visit, she was glowing and emanating love. I couldn't believe it. She said that miraculously, everyone in her family had lightened up and was happier. She received from them the appreciation she had always craved, and now she felt she had a real family for the very first time, and she was almost 60.
Wow.
So she brought this ongoing horrible situation to one of love and oneness by having the intention to experience peace. And she did this by putting her ego aside and giving her family what their souls really wanted, and that was to be seen divinely. And this is another example of the power of our intention to bring forth oneness. And like Rumi says, wherever you are, be the soul of that place.
Well, I think that about covers that one. It's amazing that her family didn't think she'd gone insane or something, though.
They were a little surprised, I think, but they weren't unhappy with what was going on.
Mm-hmm. Very neat, but it is so amazing how just setting an intention changes our so-called reality. You know, encourage Robert. Try that as an experiment. See what happens. Next question. Let's see. Franklin in New Zealand. Do animals live in a state of oneness? If so, how do we really know?
Hmm. Well, our minds are much more complex than an animal's, in case you haven't noticed. But
although we don't actually know what they're thinking.
Well, you just start playing ball with them for a while, and then it never stops. But ours are, of course, more complex. But to evolve to a human form is one of the greatest things one can experience, apparently. So if humans can bring all of their human qualities to a divine level, then they have achieved the purpose of a human life. So in some ways, animals are no different from us. If you've ever seen an animal that has been beaten, mistreated, its spirit's been broken, it'll live in fear of people and cower, or may even be aggressive. Alternatively, if you have seen an animal that has been properly bred and loved when it was young, then in turn you'll likely see this animal that would reciprocate love and trust to others. And love and trust are other words for oneness. Animals have their own karmas as we do. And according to the mystics and sages, we have experienced lifetimes that included lives as the smallest of insects all the way to various human forms. So this is very interesting. We've been animals. We aren't separate from animals again. They're part of us, and us, we're a part of them. And in yoga, one of the teachings, they refer to it as ahimsa or nonviolence. And it's a spiritual practice that we can try to adhere to on a daily basis, not just to our family and our friends, but to our brothers and sisters of the animal kingdom. For it is said that God dwells within everyone and everything. And so when we love and care for an animal, we help it to evolve.
Okay, well, I think that answers that question very well. It's interesting because, I guess, again, by seeing a different species, that's another next layer of separation. So you're saying, don't do that.
Yeah. Another separation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think we can get one or two more in here. Suzanne from Seattle writes, how do you know if you're truly in a state where you are experiencing oneness?
Well, if you've ever fallen in love, you might remember the initial opening to the feeling of oneness. You know, you saw the god or goddess in your partner and you were awestruck at the magnetism and beauty. You may have felt that you were soulmates, two bodies but one soul. Some people might feel that they have merged with the object of their affection. However, this could easily extend to the world and everybody around you when you're in love. You feel totally in touch and even in love with all the others, as well as your partner. And when you look into the eyes of everyone, you see the love that they are. You see them as gods and goddesses, too. It's like it just seems to grow, you know, when you're in love. You may even go beyond their personalities and laugh at all the things they may have bothered you about before, or that have bothered you about them before. You experience that all is right with your world. And this is where your ego has been put aside for a while, allowing you to see the interconnectedness of us all. So really, it's a little experience of oneness. But after a while, once you've gotten to know this person, the ego creeps back in, and before you know it, all of the flaws in your partner and the others that you were blind to for a brief while surface again. The familiar sense of separation returns, but really nothing has changed on the outside. But what has changed is that your mind has closed the door on your state of divinity. There's a story in the Hindu scriptures of Lord Krishna, who was an embodiment of love. It's said that Lord Krishna was loved immensely by gopis, the young women of the land. The love that the gopis felt for Lord Krishna was divine and in its purest form. The special bond that Krishna shared with the gopis made them forget all their worldly chores, and the gopis were totally merged in the love of God through the practice of constant surrender. They would leave their chores and chase after him when they heard the sound of his flute. They would become intoxicated as their soul was merging with the oversoul, which he embodied. So similarly, oneness occurs when the lover and the beloved come together in ourself, not with a partner, but within ourselves. And then the door opens to reveal the love that we already are. It just blossoms, dependent on no one or no thing. It's just ours. It just is us. So if you do not feel love or compassion for all around you, then we're likely living in separation. And if we really want to know what oneness feels like, well, oneness carries with it the feeling, sensation of love. So, that's mainly what oneness is love.
Okay, well, that's another concept our brain can get around. Somewhat. Let's try to get another one in here. Paul in Edmonton writes, oneness, it sounds nice, but how does it really fit in real-world situations?
Well, all that's real is the source from which this perceived reality sprang from. Everything else is an illusion or concept. A very simple exercise to show you this. When you close your eyes, there is no real world. It's all gone. Everything's dark. So any concern or problem that we see is only, you know, for the intellect and mind. It's just a lot of problem-making. So when we step back to the place where there is no world, starting by closing our eyes, and then diving deeply inside by praying, meditating, or whatever works for you, we then find or experience the love that we really are, and we already are. We need to return to the source where everything comes from, and then we can apply this oneness, love, if you want to call it, in our everyday lives. We must understand that we are not separate entities, but merely instruments through which God or Source functions. Then we can relax, knowing full well that we're not the doers of these actions. And then every action will be for service. And that's how it can really work in the real world, when we basically just give it over and not be the doers and let the Source do it for us. And again, with the intention that every action will be for the service and the upliftment of mankind. And again, it's always helpful to remember the only purpose of our lives is to take us back to the Source and oneness. Everything that we experience in this world is simply another opportunity for us to transmute our everyday situations from fear, greed, attachment, and all the other ego tendencies back to love and oneness. And only then will we be living in the real world and fulfilling our life's purpose.
Okay, Paul, there you go. You know, I think we're going to have to, made a valiant effort at getting through all these questions, but I think that's where we're going to have to leave it for today. But let's invite more questions, shall we? We'll hang on to the ones. If your question wasn't asked, it may be on the next show, so we'll hang on to them. And invite some more questions, maybe, you know, even going deeper. I think we've done a good job at this layer of exploring oneness in the real world and what that means and what that looks like and smells like and tastes like, but let's go deeper. So send your questions in, magicdoorway@newsforthesoul.com, and we'll get Deborah back on and we'll dive deeper through that magic doorway. Thank you so much, Deborah, for being here on News for the Soul today.
Thank you, Nicole.
MagicDoorway.com. And we have posted a link now on News for the Soul where Deborah has very kindly offered her amazing book, The Magic Doorway, which is an excellent manual for employing these ideas in real world, in your real life. So she has offered a special discount only for News for the Soul listeners. What's the discount, Deborah?
I think it's
40%. Wow, so huge chunk discount off to encourage you to buy the book to follow along with the home game, Magic Doorway. So go to magicdoorway.com, or for the special discount, look for the link on our website on the main page, newsforthesoul.com. And there you go. So we will be back next time. Send your questions in, oneness@newsforthesoul.com, and we'll be back next time with more oneness questions and answers for you on News for the Soul.
Attention, like-minded business owners. Do you have an amazing solution? A product or service for the soul? Something we can't find out about in mainstream media? Then we have a solution for you. News for the Soul is airing its Solutions for the Soul networking fundraiser show, and you could be one of our guests. This is an amazing opportunity to join host Nicole Whitney on the air to talk about your solution and share your information with the world. All guests must be pre-screened, and there is a fee to participate. All proceeds directly keep the News for the Soul show archived totally free for the world to hear, and all interviews are aired indefinitely online after the show. To find out more, go to newsforthesoul.com and click on the Solution Show banner now. That's newsforthesoul.com. And don't let fear stand in your way. This could be your turn to shine in the News for the Soul spotlight.
In December 2005, News for the Soul host Nicole Whitney experienced the most dramatic, life-changing psychic reading of her life. In that brief 10-minute mini-session, she released years of emotional baggage when Carrie O'Connor connected with a recently deceased family member, bringing Nicole a life-changing message from beyond the grave. Since that fateful day, Nicole has invited Carrie O'Connor on as a regular News for the Soul guest to do readings on the air. But you do not have to wait. Carrie is available for private sessions right now. Nicole has laughingly suggested wearing goggles and a helmet for these sessions because of the powerful energy that seems to come through Carrie when she's doing a reading. But don't take our word for it. Experience it for yourself. So pack up your goggles and helmet and book your life-changing session with Carrie O'Connor today. Go to InsideOut-OutsideIn.com. That's InsideOut-OutsideIn.com.
Who are you? Why are you here? What is the meaning of life? These burning questions have plagued mankind throughout our existence. How would you like to experience a process that would allow you to have some of the answers? Answers that would cause you to live with higher awareness and deeper authenticity from now on? Well, you can. Warrior Sage is offering an experiential 5-day enlightenment workshop called Illumination Intensive. Regularly about $3,000 to attend, Satyan Raja of Warrior Sage is offering this life-changing 5-day course to News for the Soul listeners totally for free. That's right, the tuition has been completely waived for all News for the Soul listeners. Satyan says this experience is so profound, he wants to share it with the world. So don't miss out on this special opportunity. To have your own direct experience of awakening with Warrior Sage, go to illuminationintensive.com now and tell them News for the Soul sent you. That's illuminationintensive.com.
How would you like to learn how to bend metal with your mind for real? Well, you can. News for the Soul is home to the one and only Spoon Bending Kit, an instantly downloadable digital gift that contains 2 hours of audio and visual instructions designed to get your mind out of the way and teach you how to truly affect solid matter just with your thoughts. Find out once and for all how you are affecting your reality with every thought you think. Don't let anything block you from creating the life that you want. Download the newsforthesoul.com Spoon Bending Kit today. Just go to newsforthesoul.com right now and click on the bent spoon. That's newsforthesoul.com.
Hey, this is Dave Morehouse, and you're listening to News for the Soul.
Enlightened, having knowledge and spiritual insight, freedom from illusion. Enlightened dating, an idea whose time has come. It is time for relationships that transcend the old fear-based paradigm of power plays, control dramas, stereotypes, and conditioned response. EnlightenedDating.com offers introductions and support for conscious dating. EnlightenedDating.com is about synchro destiny rather than the volume of memberships or regional location. Enlightened daters operate in the realm of all possibility, far beyond limitation of the conditioned mind. And it is not just a meeting place. Inside, you'll access the best in support and training from conscious relational experts from around the world. Ongoing interviews, webinars, and more support the search and journey in conscious relationship, all free, 24/7, for all members at EnlightenedDating.com. LifeChangingTV.com is a model of conscious journalism, documenting evolution of human consciousness through high-quality video programming. A combination of metaphysical awareness and an open, honest sense of inquiry relay the true story through alternative media that will blow your mind. Founders Nicole Whitney and Peter Williams started the channel after meeting in March 2005, drawing from Whitney's journalism background and Peter's experience as a cameraman for CNN. Since the project began, they have been able to interview many luminaries from around the world, including Stuart Wilde, John Kehoe, Dr. David Morehouse, Anne Marie Evers, John Hutchison, and others. To watch this fresh, unfiltered, cutting-edge information online, become a subscriber. Visit LifeChangingTV.com and click the Join button. It's that simple. LifeChangingTV.com, making the world a better place, one frame at a time.
It's not just a show. It's a movement. You're listening to News for the Soul, the number one life-changing radio show in the world, according to Google and AOL, and the largest free life-changing audio resource on the web. We feature the top luminaries in the evolution of human consciousness and have kept all of our shows all free, all of the time, for the world to hear. In a recent listener survey, News for the Soul listeners responded with overwhelming appreciation and praise, which they summarized with this one powerful statement. News for the Soul is not just a show. It's a movement.
Go to newsforthesoul.com to see for yourself. That's newsforthesoul.com.
This has been News for the Soul with Nicole Whitney. Visit us anytime online at www.newsforthesoul.com, where you can listen to all our previously aired shows at any time and so much more. Have a great week, and remember, what you focus on expands.